Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Forum, the show where we learn more about Husker Nation one fan at a time by asking them the same four questions. I'm your host, Honky, and our guest tonight is the host and creator of Corn Crazed, the number one Nebraska football talk show on YouTube. His 17,000-plus subscribers tune in to hear his reactions as he analyzes all the Husker news, rumors, and updates year-round. Welcome to the Forum, Connor Hayden.
Thanks for having me. It's my first time doing any type of show, I think, that isn't directly about football conversation. So when I saw it said something about fans and community, I thought, oh, this would be an interesting one to do. And we can talk about more of my background as a Nebraska fan.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you talk about community, I think of what Corn Crazed is and the community that you've created there. It's impressive. And we're going to get to that. When I reached out to you about a month or so back to do this, I had mentioned to you, I was like, I'm almost embarrassed that I came across you as late as I did. And I loved your response. I wrote it down. So you don't need to be embarrassed. I'm still relatively new. I haven't done as much marketing on social media, but I appreciate the encouragement. I'm going to just keep trying to master my content. And I thought that was the coolest answer because the content is what really impressed me the first time I saw your show. It's not that the audio isn't great. It's great. It's not that the video isn't great. It's great. But the content and I've done this for 450 shows now.
And it's a long time.
So when I see another show and I'm impressed by the amount of time that's been put in to prep for it, it really, you know, it said something to me. And I guess, so number one, I respect that. The other one is it made me think of football for a second, made me think of Coach Rhule and being 1% better every show, every day. And when I think about that, I mean, you kind of work on that. Do you try to be 1% better every show?
Yeah, I'm meticulous. I'm a psycho. So my background is in media and in content. So because I come from that world, I have a different perspective than a lot of people do. When I was looking initially at content that was Nebraska related, I thought there was kind of a void for content, the type of content I do, which is, I would call it jam-packed into a short period of time. I would be able to get a bunch of information to you as quickly as possible so you could get on with your day. There were a lot of YouTube shows that you could listen to for an hour, but there wasn't one place you could go for a quick punch that would recap everything from the day or from the week or from a specific topic. So I thought, okay, how can I make that content as impactful as possible so that someone can sit through it, not have it be something where they feel like they're not getting to watch the entire piece because they have to fast forward through it, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway, the point in all of that is when I thought about my background in media, it's like, okay, how can I take all of my skills and everything I've done in the past, helping people build their Instagrams and their YouTubes and teaching them how to speak on camera and write their content, scripting essentially, how can I bring that to the sports world, more specifically the Nebraska world, something I'm really passionate about? And I think because I came into making this, you know, Nebraska content professional, I guess we'll call it, it's always made me want to figure out how I can make it more professional, how I can look more like, not Barstool, that's not the right, because there's a little goofy, but you know, ESPN like. And I don't want to ever be the ESPN guy. I like being in my bedroom. I like making this feel like you're talking to me and hanging out with me, not like I'm a guy in a suit who's a talking head for a network. I want you to feel like my, you know, opinions are my own and I'm just kind of free flowing. I'm one of the fans. I'm one of you, right? When you listen to me and we hang out. So I always want to make sure that I'm resonating with my audience and resonating with the people who are like me, diehard fans, but also making sure that the content lives up to my expectations for what content should be and what I've always tried to perform or tried to build up to make it an impactful performance for the viewer.
Well, I love the passion that you have, and let's get to that passion. But before we do, I do want to show a couple of our upcoming episodes here. We have some fan forums next Tuesday, March 28th at 8 p.m. We'll have Redcast Sarah on. The following Monday, April 3rd at 2 p.m., we have Adam Carricker, Throwing the Bones. And then Brandon Kavanaugh, Wednesday, April 5th at 9 p.m., Husker football analyst with Athlon Sports.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Well, let's get to the form. And what is the form? It's the same four questions. Why are you a Husker fan? What is your favorite Husker fan memory? Who are your all-time favorite Huskers? And how do you think the Huskers will do next year? And let's just get to question number one here, Connor. Why are you a Husker fan?
So the basic answer is my family, right? But I've got two sides of the family. So I've got my dad who went to USC. He wasn't a big football fan. He's a sports fan and always has been my whole life. But he wasn't drilling USC football in since birth. I was born in 93. So USC was kind of on the downswing from then until the early 2000s. So I don't think my dad was that engaged with them. Then I had the other side, which was my mom's side of the family, my grandpa, my uncle. They're all from Nebraska. My grandpa, I think he was living in Omaha before he moved to California. And then I think I was probably 10 years old. He moved back to Chadron. So when I was around 10, I would go to Chadron 2 times a year for 2 weeks at a time or more than that. And I think that the vibe of Nebraska obviously kind of got ingrained in me being around Nebraska fans and my uncle and my grandpa and my mom. Obviously, that impacted me. And I think the best way to say it is Nebraska was a part of my identity from a really early age. I was given a bunch of Nebraska gear and Nebraska gifts growing up, right? So it's all I ever saw. And when I started to come to, say I'm 7 or 8 years old, I'm going to school and all I'm wearing is red. Every day I have a Nebraska hat on. People at school were calling me Nebraska. And it was it was what people knew me for because I grew up in Southern California in Orange County. And I was the only person who was a Nebraska fan at my school, right? And so that was all I knew and it was all I thought about. And because it became a part of my identity, it was so dialed into me. It was all I thought about every single waking moment.
Give me a time frame. What were those first couple formative years that you had where you were really becoming Nebraska, so to speak, out there?
So I remember going to Nebraska games and going to Lincoln. My uncle was doing his, he was getting his doctorate at Nebraska, around 2000, 2001. So My first memories going to football games were, I think my very first football game period was Troy at Nebraska in 2001. I think that's my very first ever game. I remember getting my mom getting my cousin Jansen and I. Jansen works at Rivals now. He just graduated from Nebraska, but she had gotten my cousin Jansen and I matching Nebraska outfits for that game. And then we went with my uncle and my grandpa, and then we went to Runza afterwards. And I just remember those being my first memories where I was really dialed in with Nebraska football and I was starting to pay attention to it. I was probably 7 years old. And then you go to 2004. I remember I was with my grandpa around Thanksgiving and we went to the Colorado Nebraska game in Lincoln. I remember Nebraska lost that game, but the national championship. I remember.
Yeah, that's out there in the Rose Bowl.
I remember this. So I was at my grandparents' house and it was my whole family. And my dad had gotten tickets for my uncle and my grandpa to go to the Rose Bowl. And I was 8 years old. And I remember crying because I didn't get to go. I was so upset that I wasn't going to that game. And that night I stayed at my grandpa's house with my cousin while my uncle and grandpa went to the game and they brought us back footballs and the programs and all that. So those are my first memories really of being dialed in with Nebraska. Obviously we were watching it every game or watching it at my grandpa's house or whatever, every game. But I think some games were on pay-per-view. Nebraska would play Baylor. It was on pay-per-view. So my dad wouldn't let us watch it at the house. There's moments like that that get brought back up.
That Troy game you were at, I was 23 years old at the time. And it's one of a couple of games I had at that time where we had press passes for it. Because I started up a website then, HuskerChronicles.com, that went for a few years. And that was in the early years of the Husker interweb where it's almost kind of what today is with podcasts and even video casts on YouTube where it's the Wild West. There'd be thousands of sites, but only a couple of decent ones there. We got to the point where we were able to get some press passes and go in there for a couple of games. So I got to watch one of them up there and one of them was Troy. So that was That's your first game at Memorial Stadium, huh?
That was my very first one. Wow. I remember on that trip, we had done a walk around the stadium, and we had been looking through the, kind of the fence. I know there's a picture of me with my cousin that's kind of sitting next to that fence looking into the stadium, went to the bookstore. I have so many memories of Nebraska stuff and Nebraska memorabilia because growing up, my grandpa, that was what I wanted, and that's what he would always get me. In Scotts Bluff, there was this Nebraska store. And every time we go to Chadron, we'd drive down to Scotts Bluff because I wanted to go to that Nebraska store. I'd get Nebraska Legos, Nebraska posters. There was this old school Nebraska video. It was a VHS, and it was about, I don't remember what it was, but it was almost like a documentary of the championship season in 95. I think that's what it was. I've watched that video 100 times. Haven't seen it since I was like 12 years old, but I remember picking that up.
Reflection of Perfection, I think.
It was probably Reflection. That's a very familiar name.
Yeah, there's, so, there's Unfinished Business or Finished Business, whatever they did after 94. And then Reflection of Perfection was the 95 perfect season.
That sounds familiar. So it might have been that. And then my grandparents had a basement in Chadron, and the whole basement was almost like a playroom. So it was all Nebraska stuff, right? Some other things my grandpa had gotten me that I had loved that are all coming back to me right now. I don't think about these obviously on the daily, but now that we're talking about it, I was a big Maurice Purify fan. That must have been when I was seventh, eighth grade. And I have a picture of Maurice Purify going up for a ball against Colorado, and it's autographed. I loved him. Danny Woodhead, that's another, it's tied to Nebraska. So Danny Woodhead went to Chadron State. Yep. I didn't get to go to any of his games, but we'd always be up at the college. And then, because I would be, I would have my own football games then. I wasn't going back to Nebraska during September, October. Anyway, Danny Woodhead had a signing at that Walmart, and my grandpa went over there with a football and a picture and got him to sign both of them, sent them back to me. And I still have those in my bedroom now. So pretty cool.
Well, you know, you may be answering part of question two here, but question two is, what is your favorite Husker football fan memory? Now, you've mentioned, you know, going out to Chadron and Scotts Bluff and going to Troy games. What else?
So I've been really lucky because my dad, I told you he's a USC fan, right? So when USC got good again, my dad started paying attention to him. So that's 2002, 2003. I was 9, 10 years old, and it became kind of a hobby for my dad and I to go to games. So through work, he had season tickets. So we'd always go to SC games. And then that transitioned to us traveling to football games. So my dad and I kind of have this tradition now. He's 62 now, but he's still going strong. So we go to games, but every single year we go to at least one college football game, at least sometimes two. We throw in NFL games in there. We go to other things too, basketball, baseball, but our main thing is football. So I've actually gotten to go with my dad to Michigan in, I think, 2010. I was a senior in high school. I went down. They had the little tunnel for Michigan, and Levante David was my favorite player at the time. Obviously, he was the best player on the team. I got to walk down there and smack hands with Levante, which I thought was so cool. That was a great memory. We went to Wisconsin for the Melvin Gordon game, which obviously that was punishing, but it was a good experience because Wisconsin fans were so cool. They're throwing me beers and everything. I was like 21, so it was awesome. Wisconsin was great. Penn State, Nebraska won in overtime. That was probably 2012. They kicked a field goal to win. That was great. So I've had a lot of good memories with him. But a solo memory that I remember, and this is one I will forever cherish. I was with my best friend from high school. His name's Tyler. We were on this road trip. We were like 22, not a road trip. It was a regular trip, but it turned into a little road trip because Nebraska had just lost to Purdue in 2015. We were going to be in Lawrence, Kansas, visiting one of his friends. We were on this like month-long trip, visiting a bunch of college campuses, just partying. So we found out Nebraska was going to play Michigan State. Michigan State was obviously a top 10 team at the time. So we rented a car in Lawrence, drove up to Lincoln. This is his first ever Nebraska game. And I think my first Nebraska home game as an adult. Yeah, it was. My only other Nebraska game before then had been 2004 for Colorado. So we go to this game, and it was a fantastic experience, obviously, because we lost our voices. Nebraska ended up winning. We're filming it all. It was incredible. And then after that, we ended up on Tinder, finding a bunch of girls, going to bars. They had a party at their house. We got to meet all these other kids who went to Nebraska. And obviously, that was a really cool moment for me because I had never had any friends who liked Nebraska or cared about Nebraska. So the only people who I had talked about Nebraska football with was my dad, my family, or older guys who would see me wearing Nebraska stuff out in public. No kids would ever talk about it. So in that moment, I got to talk to other 20-year-olds who liked it as much as I did, which I thought was the coolest thing. And I think part of that, or part of the reason that I wanted to start Corn Craze was because of that experience. I enjoyed so much having those conversations with other people who were my age that I thought, what if I could find other people my age who I could talk to about that? And that's part of the reason I started the Corn Crazed brand originally.
Well, let's talk about Corn Craze before we get to question three. Then tell us, you know, you've given us a little bit of the history of you as a Husker fan, but how about what is Corn Craze? How did you get it going? Obviously, how did you get it created to where it is the number one YouTube show right now for Husker football? It's very impressive. Again, Redcasters, if you haven't come across it, you should. Okay.
I appreciate it. So very simply, I was in a low point. I live in Hollywood. So I was working in media and I was working with a urban media Instagram and YouTube account. And it's not really my demographic. It's more like celebrity drama, female-based drama. So not my deal. But I enjoyed the whole process of meeting all these celebrities and traveling around. I mean, I got some great experiences out of it. I was traveling with Floyd Mayweather. I got to do a bunch of stuff, marketing around his fight against Floyd or against Conor McGregor. I was in his house for that. I've done a bunch of things with him, Cardi B. Anyway, being around all these celebrities was the fun part, but doing the actual work and the day-to-day wasn't that exciting to me. So I remember thinking to myself, what can I do to get out of my, we'll call it a rut, because it did feel like a little mini depression. It's like, what can I do to start something creatively that's mine, that I'm passionate about, and that I can invest into in my free time? And I was like, okay, well, Scott Frost just got hired. Nebraska's coming off this great 2018 season. Relatively great. They're coming off this season, and there was so much hype going into 2019. You had Adrian, who was a potential Heisman candidate, or I think he was a Heisman candidate. Nebraska was ranked in the top 25. There was just a lot of promise. So I called my cousin. I was like, you know, I think I need to start a Nebraska Instagram page. That's something I can invest a lot of time into, and I'll just see where it goes. But it's something I can get excited about because my work life was uninspiring to me at that point. So I start this Instagram page, and I think I ran it for about a year before I ever posted a video of myself or anything that was my opinion where someone could see my face. And when I did finally post my face, people were like, yo, I need more of this. And most of my followers were high school kids. There were some adults, but it was mostly high school kids. So I was like, okay, I'll post some little video clips on here, almost like reels. So this is back in 2020. I think I made a video talking about Matt Lubick and what the Matt Lubick hire meant to Nebraska. It was a 1 minute video. And a lot of people liked that video. So I said, okay, well, maybe I can throw something up on the YouTube channel. So I start this YouTube channel. I don't remember what the very first video was, but one of the first three was a conversation around whether it would be Adrian or Luke to be the starting quarterback. And that video took off. It was just video clips. It was no face. It was just an audio voiceover with video clips of Luke and Adrian and me talking about which one deserved the starting job. Oh, it was why Luke McCaffrey will win the starting job at Nebraska. That's exactly what it was. Anyway, I made that video. It hit 13,000 views. And I thought, okay, well, if I can hit 13,000 views on a video, what if I can replicate that? This sounds like a good idea for the Corn Craze brand. I can get a lot more reach than I'm getting on Instagram currently because Instagram had 2,000 followers and I'd get, you know, 50 comments on a picture and I'd have hundreds of likes, but it wasn't growing as fast as I would want it to. I needed to have a personality and a brand out there. So I just started creating a lot of YouTube content. And then, I think it was averaging like 3,000 to 5,000 views a video. And I decided to print off stickers and of the Corn Craze logo. I mean, you guys know what it is. It's this. I made a bunch of these on Sticker Mule. And I told everybody who was watching the videos, or I think I told everyone on Instagram or something, if you subscribe to the channel and send me a screenshot that you're subscribed, I'll send you one of these stickers. I went from 200 subscribers to 1,000 subscribers in 2 weeks. Just sending off these stickers that I bought. It cost me, you know, $50 or something, which was fantastic. So from there, I had, say, 2,000 to 3,000 subscribers in 2020. I had started making content during that season. Obviously, things were a little bit screwed up since it wasn't a full season. But because I enjoyed the process, I wanted to kind of take it more seriously. In 2021, I left the company I was at, and I said, I'm just going to consult. I'm going to do brand and digital media consultations for influencers I know. And then on the side, I'm going to run Corn Craze with the ultimate goal being to build a YouTube career, essentially. I didn't know if it was going to be Corn Craze. I didn't know if it was going to be college football. I just knew I wanted to make money doing something that wasn't the job I had before. So I leave that company. I start working with this NBA player and his wife. I'm traveling around the country with them, around the world with them. It was great. But right when we get to football season, I told both of them, hey, I'm going to be able to help you guys. We can text, but I cannot travel. I got to focus on this YouTube deal. And they both understood. They were very cool about that. And in my first year on YouTube, I made enough money to cover my rent, a little more. And I realized that I could take this seriously. And now we're here. I just focused for two seasons, essentially, where I didn't work on anything except for the YouTube channel, and it's gotten to 17,000 subscribers.
Well, that's awesome. And, you know, that's it's a great story, too, of having something that you're passionate about, chasing the passion, and not being afraid to just go and do it. You know, I think that's a lot of us that care about this program. You know, we want to do shows and everything, but to have the vision that you have and to go through with it, I think is awesome. I want to ask a question here to you. This is something that I posted to our social media here the other day, and it's talking about what kind of fan we are. And mm-hmm. It was Husker fans. Do you consider yourself to be an optimist, a realist, 50-50, or changes by day? And the reason I ask this and I ask it with you is one of the last shows I was watching of yours, it was right after the signing class.
Mm-hmm.
And you had talked about Coach Rule. You were really impressed with the class that he brought in. And what was cool is you showed excitement. It wasn't you don't hold back. You're not it's not this Debbie Downer, realist, pessimist, everything. But at the same token, you were also like, but I had legit questions when we hired Rule that he can't just bring in Temple and Baylor players and only be a developmental program. So there's mm-hmm. got to be a little bit of mix of both. And you showed that happiness that came with some really good players that we brought in this class, the ability to go out there and bring some top-notch guys in to retain a Malachi Coleman right out of Lincoln, all of that, while also wanting to be that development program. It was that little bit of pessimism, a little bit of optimism all at right. the same time. Those are the fans that are, to me, the most interesting ones to talk with. It's the ones that I like to talk with. And it's one of the first reasons why I wanted to bring you onto the show, too. So I'm curious, like, how do you, label yourself, or do you even try to label yourself? Are you optimist? Are you realist? Are you both? How would you call it?
I haven't thought too much into that. I would say I'm very logical as a person. I don't make mm-hmm. decisions emotionally. I mean, I do, but very rarely. So most of my takes are logical takes. I throw some emotion in there because it's exciting to talk with other people who are passionate about what I love. But I would say most of my content is as close to realistic as possible, but I've got to throw some optimism in there because if I'm not being somewhat optimistic, what's the point? It's not fun. Mm-hmm. The fun in life is being optimistic. It's having hope, right? I want to have hope about everything I do. If I don't wake up today with hope about whatever it is, not even Nebraska football, what's the reason I'm getting up in the morning? What's the reason I'm doing anything? What's the reason I'm going to watch Nebraska football if I don't believe there's a chance, right? I think I would say I'm a – did you have a 50-50 option?
Yeah, there's a 50-50 option there.
I think you can say I'm a little bit of a 50-50 option. I'm an optimist. I'm a realist. I'm logical at the end of the day. So because I'm logical, I think that forces some realism. But ultimately, for the sake of the channel and for the sake of my heart, I'm an optimist.
Well, and you're a fan, and that's what this show is. And what is fan short for? It's fanatic. I mean, it brings the craziness out of a little bit, mm-hmm. a little bit of the craziness out of all of us. I think about that like, we've had people say we should live stream a show, during a football game. I'm like, no, not at all. I can't control myself during a game, right. Let alone anything else.
Have you watched my post game reactions? You found the channel late. If you watch some of my post game reactions, you'll get the most emotional side of me. I've had some yelling moments. I mean, people, it's hot. The mic gets hot. It gets loud. I told people this is not a kid's show on a live stream. I try to keep it, calm on my regular show because everyone watches that. But after a game, I open up. It's me. You get the raw, unfiltered Connor after I see that display, whether it's good or bad. So, yeah, I would check out the Indiana post game or the Rutgers post game. I got pretty emotional in both of those. So
I'll have to. We do a rapid reaction, but quite honestly, we haven't been doing very many because I don't think we could put the show together that we want to. Probably the show that honestly the fans would love to watch, but not the ones that I want to do at that point.
What I've realized is people want to watch the raw reaction. So forever I was putting post-game analysis out there and it was good. I liked the post-game analysis show because it would give you a breakdown of what happened, why it happened, how Nebraska could make things better going forward. But the truth is what people really wanted was to see themselves. They wanted to see someone yell at the freaking screen the same way they were yelling at the screen the entire time.
No, and that's true. We've had plenty of those moments over the last 5 years to be doing that too. We started this podcast in April 2017, the spring, right after the final bowl game. So, and we did it primarily to be a football show and then also do some men's basketball and some baseball. And it has not been a glorious time on the field, but we always try to find a little bit of the positives. Let's go to question number three here. Who are your all-time favorite Huskers?
Okay. So my number one on this list has to be Chris Kelce. So my grandpa, when I was however old, bought me a Chris Kelce autographed card. And then I think he got me a Chris Kelce jersey, a number 57, a white one. So that number 57 resonated with me for whatever reason. And I remember throughout Pop Warner, from second grade through eighth grade, I was wearing number 57 because of Chris Kelce. And I loved looking at that picture. And I don't remember many games with him playing. I've gone back and looked at highlights, so I remember. But back then, I don't remember really watching. It was more so just the fact that I had the jersey and I had the autograph. And I just loved that guy for what my grandpa kind of opened my eyes to, right? Which was Nebraska football, playing defense. And I played defense all throughout that time. If I thought about a player who I really loved watching, Levante David's up there. I loved all those DBs back in the Bo Pelini days. Eric Hag, you know, the NCAA football games. I loved playing those. I'm not sure if you played those or because you're a little older than I am.
Yeah, but when I was high school, like the Bill Walsh games from like the 90s. Yeah,
right. So when I was in high school, they had the Xbox, obviously, so the graphics were a little better, and I would play with a nickel package, and I'd have all those DBs: Alfonso Dennard, Eric Hag, Prince Amukamara, Larry Asante. There were a bunch of them who were all studs.
I remember all those guys, yeah.
Yeah, for all those 3-4 years when Pelini had great DBs, I remember playing with them. So I love all those guys. On offense, I always loved dual threat quarterbacks. And so I had a hard time when Nebraska switched up from Jamal Lord. I remember thinking to myself, what are they doing? I like Joe Gans. He was cool. Zach Taylor was kind of whatever to me. At the time, obviously, because I was like watching dual threat quarterbacks. And when Nebraska went back to Taylor Martinez, I got really excited. So I loved watching Taylor Martinez. He was a favorite. But yeah, I mean, there's so many guys, right? Amir Abdullah. I remember I went to, or not scope out, I went to hang out with Nebraska players at their hotel when they were playing against UCLA. I was probably 18. So my friend and I went up to the hotel. I brought a Nebraska hat with me. I had Cameron Meredith. Who else was there? Damian Stafford, Amir Abdullah. There were a bunch of guys. Jamal Turner, I think. I don't know. I got a bunch of guys to sign my hat, and I got to hang out with all those guys at the hotel before the UCLA game. So there's been a lot of players I've had a little bit of a connection with where I've really enjoyed watching them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned Zach Taylor there. I would go do coaches clinics at UNL in the spring from the last year of Solich all the way to the Frost era. So you go to a practice during spring ball and everything. And I was there. I watched a 200-play scrimmage where Zach Taylor won the position, the starting position, away from Joe Daly. Wow. A 200-play, no green jerseys. If anyone listens to the Redcast long enough, you're going to hear me say, take the green jerseys off and let the guys play sometimes. That's some of the thing. You know what? I'm just going to get the question for her because I think this leads right into it. How do you think the Huskers will do this year? But it's the thing I love about what Coach Rhule is bringing. It's this old-school kind of vibe of we're going to get physical, we're going to hit, we're going to have fullbacks, we're going to do all those things, but we're also going to do it sensibly. We're going to do it in a 2023 kind of way, and we got to play with transfer portal, NIL, all that. So it's a little bit of old school, a little bit of new school, but I want to get your thoughts. What are your thoughts here going into next season?
So this is where we have that conversation of optimist versus realist, right? The optimist in me made a video 2 months ago where I said, here's my way too early schedule prediction. And I broke down every team that Nebraska plays against. And when you look back at what Nebraska was last year, Nebraska had what they were last year and what they're bringing in this year, including the coaching staff and all these transfer players who can play right away. Nebraska has the potential to beat 8 of these teams on their schedule. Will they is a tougher question, because how much better will the line be? Both sides, the offense and the defensive line. How accurate will their quarterbacks be? Is this going to be a turnover-prone team? There are so many questions. And that's where the realist comes back. Nebraska can beat 8 of these teams because there aren't 8 really good teams on the schedule. There are 3 good teams on the schedule. The rest are decent, in my opinion. So because they're decent, it's hard for me to say Nebraska's only a 6-win team because I see so much potential. But the reality is, right now, Nebraska is going to win 6 of those games in my head. The realist in me is saying that. So as of today, I'm saying 6 with a ceiling of 8. And anything can happen because we don't know what the starting lineup's going to look like. We still don't know how the defense is going to project. There are so many question marks still. But ultimately, I hope that Nebraska can come away with just getting to a bowl game, because if you just get that spark and momentum back, I think the entire fan base is already bought in enough to this process. They're bought in enough to the idea that Matt Rhule isn't going to turn this around tomorrow. And it doesn't take him turning it around tomorrow to build the right class for the future, right? We've seen all these recruits who Nebraska is going to bring in on a Friday, Saturday. Well, if Nebraska can land, I don't want to say some ridiculous number like half, but if Nebraska can land a quarter of them, get six or seven of these guys, sprinkle in a couple four stars, maybe bring in the big one, there's a lot of hope going forward. And fans would be very happy with six wins this year, just knowing that someone's got the program back on track, back into being, you know, serviceable, not just being a train wreck that we all have to watch every single year.
Well, and that's certainly has been what it has been. Your dad, you said, was a USC fan. And I think of what the turnaround that Pete Carroll did there. And yet it wasn't instantaneous. They lost to K-State 2 years in a row in the early years. You know, people forget that Nick Saban went 6-6 in his first season at Alabama, lost to Louisiana Monroe at the end of the year. Louisiana Monroe put it up on their on a billboard that Alabama had to drive by on the way back home. So, you know, a 6-6 season by no means should be poo-pooed around here at all. What I would say is, and what I've been saying this offseason, to me, it's the race to six. And that means I think it's important to get to that bowl game. I think that's an important minimum. Not that if we only win five, that Rhule has failed, but I think it's important to show some early success. And right now, success is that getting to six. Now, I'm not saying 6-6. I'm not going to put a ceiling on this program. I never will.
Yeah.
But if it takes us 6 weeks to win six games, awesome, right? Hey, we're 6-0, and you know we'll revamp our expectations then. Or if we're sitting at 5-6 and we're playing Iowa, then get the win, beat Iowa at home, and let's get to a bowl game. Getting to that bowl game for the first time in the history of the Redcast, I can tell you that would be a big deal. And certainly for this program, it's a big deal to that. There's some tangible evidence at that point that a change is happening. But, you know, I don't think we're in the worst situation we've ever been in the history of Husker football to start with. You know, we played a lot of competitive games over the last few years, but we found every conceivable way to lose them. And I think that's the task to Rhule there is figure out ways not to lose those games by maddening one score losses time and time again.
Well, here's a question then. Mm-hmm. What's a failure of a season?
Well, just using the metrics I just said, not making a bowl game. I mean, that was something that was a pretty big deal that we did here for a long time. From 1962 to 2003, making a bowl game was the expectation. In fact, really winning nine games was an expectation.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not throwing that expectation out there, but getting to a bowl game, you know, why we almost get to a point as a fan base because we've been beaten down, right? Why can't we make a bowl game? Why is that such a big deal anymore? I mean, in fact, everyone, their dog makes one and we haven't. And it's because, and if I said we're going to win 10 games next year, I don't necessarily look at 10 teams and say we can't beat these 10. Every year we do a thing before the season starts where we go game by game and we have Twitter polls and we get tens of thousands of Twitter votes on it. And it's game by game. What's Nebraska going to do? And almost every single year we go 10-2 or 11-1 in those votes because you ask and you'd ask a fan, they would say, we're going to go 6-6. We're going 7-5. No way we're doing better than that. Then you ask them to break it down at a game by game level and they can't do it. They just can't. It's not Colorado's not going to be the one that beats us.
Right.
It can't be Minnesota. It can't. Okay, fine. I'll give you Wisconsin. I'll give you Michigan. But the other 10, screw it. We're beating them all. And I get guilty of that all the time, too.
I'm going to be honest with you. If Nebraska doesn't win six games, I'm going to be feeling some type of way this year. I don't think it's going to be the ultimate momentum killer, but I do think it's going to hurt a little bit in recruiting, which means it might take a little bit longer to get back built to be in that perennial 9-win team. I think if Nebraska hits 4 or 3, it's going to be really brutal for the fans. And you think back to 2021, when there was a lot of hype because you had the defense coming back. You had JoJo Doman hyping everybody up. And we believed that they were going to be a force. The defense was a force, but the other half didn't come together. And because of that, Nebraska didn't live up to any expectation because every expectation we set along the way never came true. It was like we thought we could get to six wins that year to start. And then after every single week losing by 1 point, we thought, okay, well, it can't be this bad the entire way. And then we lose by one score all the way out. And then you had last year, and there was so much hype with this new staff, all of the transfers. And the point is, how much more can the fan base take? three or four wins, I think that would be bone crunching for the fans, knowing how much potential this team has. And take away the team's potential. Look at the schedule. This is, again, a very weak schedule, and they've got to beat some of these shitty teams.
Well, and I think that's part of it, is that when we've lost, you know, I hear people say, well, you're in the Big Ten, and the Big Ten is that's why we've lost games. Well, bullshit. We've lost to Troy, and we've lost to Northern Illinois.
Right.
We got swept by a Colorado team that I was out there at the Colorado game where 35,000 of us in red are in Boulder, and we're up 17-0 and a half, right? I mean, we found every conceivable way to lose games that you shouldn't lose. One of the things, it's in addition to defense, defense did great a couple years ago. Offense struggled, but how about special teams being so poor, losing so many games? You can't count on – I was at the Oklahoma game in 01 where we miss a 30-yard field goal from the middle of the field. We get an extra point blocked and return for 2 points. That's a six-point swing in a seven-point game. Before the first play of the game, we have two pre-snap penalties, and Adrian Martinez isn't touching the ball until it's first and 20. And you just sit there and you pull your hair out. And in the COVID year of 2020 against Northwestern, we have five offensive linemen have five penalties in the first half. You can't win football games. That's just bad football, and you're going to lose in the Big Ten. You're going to lose – in the MAC, you're going to lose playing in Colorado. You're going to just lose games. It's losing football. And that's almost the thing that I would be disappointed to go back to your question about what would I be disappointed in? If the culture of just losing and that mentality can't get flipped by Rhule, which, by the way, I would be shocked at this point if it's not.
I agree.
If there's one strength that guy has immediately, it is getting you to want to run through a wall for the dude. And he has the son of a preacher kind of prophecy that he brings with him. I mean, he knows how to get people connected. And I'll make one other statement that I want to hear from you here. This reminds me, well, it doesn't remind me personally. I wasn't alive then, but everything I've read about when Devaney got here after 20 years of losing bad football for 20 years, lots of coaches they went through. When Devaney got here, before he even coached a game, he spent the entire first offseason going across the state, getting people to support him, going up to Shattern, going to Valentine, going all over the place, and just saying it's important that we get Nebraskans to follow us. But he also kind of highlighted a game on that schedule early. It was at Michigan. It wasn't a very good Michigan team. That's the state that Devaney was from, was Michigan. And they went down to the Big House, and they beat Michigan in week two. And it was this game that kind of gave the team confidence. It was the game that gave the fans confidence. Oh, my gosh, we may actually – get something turned around.
Right.
When I think this season, Minnesota in week one, it actually kind of is that game a little bit to me. It's a road game. It's a Thursday night game. It's in August. I mean, the last two Augusts, we haven't got out of the month without the season ruined already. And the idea that we could go down there, beat Fleck, which would be just wonderful for Husker fans. But I don't think it's an unbeatable Minnesota team. And they've had their own offseason of hell right now, losing coaches and losing players. I look at that game as that's a big moment if we can go in there and come out with a W.
I would say that's a game Nebraska should win. So when I watch that, I'm going to be watching for, is this a game where Nebraska competes the way they did last year in the first half, or is it a second half performance? Because last year's first half against Minnesota was exactly what I would have expected against Minnesota the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. But I think most of us would have. The first half was fantastic. They ran the ball well. The game management was good. The defense played solid. The second half was such an embarrassing, just the whole thing was just embarrassing, the performance. If Nebraska has that second half kind of vibe against Minnesota this second time, it's going to be hard for me to have a lot of faith that this team can win more than six this year.
Mm-hmm.
But if Nebraska comes out, keeps it within, I don't want to say three, let's say seven. If Nebraska keeps it within one score at all, I'm going to feel good that even though Rhule couldn't win the first one, let's say, I'm going to feel good that he's got this team back on the right track. And I'm not going to say that he needs to win his first game against a coach who's been at Minnesota for 7 years, returns his quarterback, brings in a really solid running back, obviously has a bunch of guys on defense returning. There's a lot working against Matt Rhule in this situation because it's a road game against a solid team with a lot of experience. But I do have a lot of hope that if Nebraska was to win that game, it could set Nebraska up for the more exciting season that we're hoping for.
Let's bring the optimistic side of this. Let's put our happy hats on for a second. We beat Minnesota. And we beat them by one. We beat them by 10. I don't really care the difference, yeah. but we beat them. Now, how does that change, whether it's expectations or your perspective? How does that start to change it?
Yeah, instant. So if Nebraska beats Minnesota, that's an 8-win football team. And there's no question I will be riding high on them because they're going to win their next three. Colorado's going to be okay this year. I think Colorado has a chance to win six. I don't think they're going to, but I think they have a chance to. They have a lot of talent and they have good coaches, right? And they play in the Pac-12. There are some weak teams on their schedule. Anyway, Nebraska's going to beat Colorado. They're going to win those next two games. And then you have Michigan, who we'll call it a loss. But after that, their most challenging games are Iowa, Wisconsin, and I think Illinois. Every other game on there is winnable. And by the way, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Illinois are all beatable teams. Nebraska has a real shot to make a serious bowl game, not a guaranteed rate bowl, to make, you know, holiday bowl level. I don't know what the holiday bowl equivalent is now. Is it one of the Florida bowls? But anyway, yeah, I would say if Nebraska can beat Minnesota, 8 wins is my new expectation.
Yeah, well, and just getting off to that good start. It's the thing that Frost talked about forever. We just need momentum. We need momentum. And whether it was lightning strikes against that, you know, Akron, or you know, just baffling play calls against Illinois 2 years ago, we were at the Illinois game.
Always something to make the team believe. Or I don't know if it was the fan base, the team, something always held them back from crossing the next step.
Yes. And when you start off 0-6 in year one, this is, I don't want to turn this into a bash Frost thing. Yeah. I had all the expectations and all the, there'd be nothing I'd be happier than right now to be talking with you about Frost going into year six and having won countless titles already. Right. I mean, that's who didn't want the golden child coming home to have all the success, but it just didn't happen. And for him, it didn't happen quickly to go 0-6. Now we were more competitive, but you're still 0-6. And it's one of the reasons why I think it's so important for Coach Rhule to be able to demonstrate some of that success early on, that the changes he's making, we're starting to see on the field in smarter play, not giving up 10-0 leads against Minnesota at half, not giving up a double-digit lead against Wisconsin in the fourth quarter, making the 30-yard field goal, kicking the 10-yard field goal against Michigan when we drive down and you know, that Michigan game 2 years ago, people still talk about Martinez fumbling at the end, but what about us not kicking a field goal when we drive down the field and have a chance to be the first team to take a lead on Michigan that whole season? There's just situational football times where getting ahead of a team that hasn't been down, that's a, you know, that it puts stress under them. And we've seen what Nebraska looks like under stress. Let's put other teams under stress.
Yeah. I'm hoping that Matt Rhule has a little bit more of that game management, I guess we'll say, than Scott Frost did. Cause Scott Frost's game management was awkward at times.
You talked about like the Xbox game. If you had, you know, the coaches and it said, you know, coaching ability, game management, this and this, what would Frost be for game management?
I mean, he was the worst in the Big Ten because there were always so many questionable moments, right? The the field goal with Michigan was a great example. The onside kick was a great example against Northwestern. And I'm sure there were a bunch of times when he was, I know there were a bunch of times when he wasn't running the ball as much as he should have been, right? It was less game management and overall offensive scheme, I guess we can say. There was a lot of issues with Scott Frost, unfortunately. What's sad about the Scott Frost situation is we all had so much hope. We were all so excited. And so it hurt even more because we were so amped up for it. I think if Matt Rhule failed, we'd be frustrated, but it wouldn't be the same pain that we felt with Scott Frost. I guess that's the good thing for Matt Rhule. He doesn't have as much pressure as Frost did.
You had a great show on Monday night. And Redcasters, if you haven't watched it yet, I don't know how. There are 17 or so thousand people, I think, they already have. And it was just talking about the first day of spring practice. But also, you brought up the roundtable discussion that Coach Rhule, Coach Frost, and Trev had. And, I asked you this not only as a fan. You're a Husker fan, but you're also a producer, a video guy. You know, you have history in media. How good is Trev in that role? ESPN background and everything. When he's sitting at a round table, I'm like, he needs to do this 50 times a year. He needs to do this with basketball coaches, with bring the soccer coach on, bring fans on, bring players on. I mean, he is so good in that role. And then Coach Rhule is so good in the role that he was right there sitting next to him. We had Coach Osborne on this show a year ago, and Coach, you could just see him when he was talking with Rhule. This is, I mean, he's bought in even. I mean, he's like, I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah.
So I guess as you saw that, what were your thoughts watching that for the first time?
Well, it all ties into the professionalism and how this program feels like a more legitimate program. It doesn't feel like it was ran the way it's been run the last few years. There were a lot of question marks around the program. I think one thing that people love to say is, well, how did you not know Scott Frost was a mess? Why were you vouching for Scott Frost to stay the head coach? Well, in all honesty, we didn't see anything coming out of the program. We didn't get anywhere near as much access. We didn't hear anywhere near as much bad or good about the coaches as we do now. It felt like a lot of the issues with Scott Frost got swept under the rug and the media didn't report on them, or the media didn't know about them. You had the one leader, Trev Alberts, who a lot of us trusted. I know there are some people who have their comments and nonsense about Trev Alberts, but he has been solid since the day he got hired. Trev Alberts vouched for Scott Frost, obviously, by keeping him for another year. Anyway, after all that was said and done, we looked at the last 5 years of the Scott Frost era and said, there was so much dysfunction and so much we didn't know about. It wasn't transparent. It was just a clusterfuck over at Nebraska. And now when we get all of this content and we see all the positivity, we hear all of these things from leadership, from Matt Rhule, from Trev Alberts, Tom Osborne, and there are other media members and people who've come in now and given their takes. There's obviously a bunch of guys and talking heads on the radio who are close to the program who said what they feel. It's a real program. It feels like a professional place. It doesn't feel like a high school program anymore. And so because it's more professional, it gives all of us more confidence, especially myself. And it makes me more excited to create content for the future because I know that I'm not doing as much guessing. You know, I feel like there's actual truth to what these coaches are saying. It's not just hope. They're not speculating. They know what their program's going to produce. They know what these players can do because they've seen it before. They have a process that works. The last administration, the last staff didn't have a proven process, I think is the best way to break it down. And because they didn't have that proven process, now when you look at it next to a process that's, you know, what it is, it's night and day different. So that roundtable was just another example of professionalism inside the Nebraska program.
Absolutely. Well, we had a comment from Jamie earlier, and he talked about, as we were saying, what would we expect with Rhule in year one? And he mentioned the one or two wins that he had, again, you know, with Temple in year one. And I think to your last point there about this is a coaching staff that's been through this before. It's apples and oranges when we're comparing year one in Nebraska versus what he went into at Baylor versus what he went into at Temple. We're not even in the same realm, but it is that he's been through this before. And when you've done something before and you've learned from it and you've, you know, people can sit there and question, why do you hire Bob Wager? Why do you hire a Texas high school coach? And that would mean a lot. That maybe be a scarier thing for me if you haven't also hired Joey McGuire to be out of, you know, Texas high school. And now he's the head coach at Texas Tech. You've done this before. You've demonstrated the success. And what I like about when Trev, you go back 18 months ago, when Trev kept Frost around for another year, I mean, he was doing a lot of things. He's observing. He's a grinder. He's going to be there at 5 o'clock in the morning. He's going to leave at 8 o'clock at night. And if he's not seeing coaches around there at that time, that's a problem. He's going to walk the hallways. And if he is trying to raise $160 million for a new cafeteria and he's seeing the current cafeteria not being full with players, that's a problem. And those are things that you know, he could have let go of Frost earlier. He absolutely could have, but he learned a lot, I think, in that offseason. And it didn't take him long to pull the trigger last year, 3 games in the season. And then when he did, that press conference, he wasn't trying to bury Frost. He was just simply, these are the things I want to see moving forward. And I want to see a grinder. And I want to see us be physical on the lines of scrimmage and win that part of the game. And all these little things, then Rhule gets hired and he is literally saying the same things. Then they introduce Satterfield and Satterfield is everything just feels like it's an extension. So you kind of talked about the dysfunction of the last few years. This is the first time in a long time where I don't see that dysfunction from, you know, all the way up and down the line.
Well, these pieces fit together. I think that's the best way to say it, right? You had the last staff, and Scott Frost picked some guys at random when he had to fill jobs. Like the Matt Lubick felt, you know, kind of out of nowhere. It wasn't like he was tied to anybody else on the staff.
He was tied to a credit union.
and he was tied to Scott Frost, but he wasn't tied to the other staff. You're right. Whereas this staff has all worked together in some capacity. Most of them have worked together in some capacity. Mm-hmm. They've all worked with Rhule before. So he understands their temperaments, their personalities, their strengths, their weaknesses, and how he can develop them into being a better coach. More importantly, how he can develop them into being a fit for his staff. Because you look at a guy like Donovan Raiola, there were a lot of questions. Why is he being retained? Well, I'll tell you the number one reason why. Because he fit with the staff. It wasn't just about him being a good offensive line coach or having the right offensive line philosophy. He was a fit with the culture that they wanted to build, because as we've seen, one of the most important things in college football is building the right culture. I guarantee Kirby Smart has a staff that he's built up that's similar to this Matt Rhule staff. Because when you want to build the right culture, you've got to have the coaches buy in before you have all of your players buy in.
Yeah, I think that the Raiola one was awesome. How when Rhule was asked about it, you know, why did you retain Raiola? And he's like, well, for one of the reasons, he wouldn't leave. We'd show up those first couple of weeks. He just kept working. And I don't know, we kind of like that, right? I mean, and Satterfield said, you know, he was already going into it thinking I'm going to get somebody else. But you start to talk to Raiola and, oh, my gosh, you know, you have these connections. And you said something, too, about Coach Rhule, that he's going to develop coaches just like he develops players. And he really seems like a manager of coaches. Like, that's a passion of his, not a passing, like, oh, it's part of the job I have to do, but I really want to be the offensive coordinator, or I really want to do this fun part of it. No, I'm going to hand those jobs off to somebody else, but I'm going to develop these coaches. And I think the tree that he's already started to create demonstrates, again, another example of this is something he's done before, you know.
And elite coaches have elite coaching trees.
Yes.
So you see Nick Saban and the coaches that he's putting out, Bill Belichick. Yep. You look at all the coaches tied to him. Now, what's going to happen with Matt Rhule? He's investing the same way that these other big time coaches are investing into their staff. And I would assume that the trajectory is going to continue to stay on trend. He's got Joey McGuire now at Texas Tech. Who's his next coach? Is it Tony White? Because I've heard that Tony White's a hot name to be a head coach at some point. So is that the guy that he went and picked out because he knows Tony White's coachable, just like he talks about all of his players being coachable? I think these are all really important things to pay attention to. And I think they're all kind of the makeup of what makes Matt Rhule, I don't want to call him elite, but a really good head coach right now.
Yeah, with the opportunity, the chance to get elite.
Yeah,
of course. Well, let's talk. We still got about 10 more minutes here, because I don't want to take you over too much. But part of getting elite is recruiting. This is a big week. There's a big weekend of recruiting. I want to show a photo first, and I think this will be a nice you know, lead in into it. Tell us a little bit about this. This is obviously you and Dylan Raiola. Is this at the championship game?
Yeah, I was at the national championship with my dad. I was sitting in the Georgia section, and we walked away for a minute at halftime to go grab beers. And that's right in front of where I think it was Nick Saban, Dion, whoever else was doing the game day show. There was a game day show right there, and there were a bunch of fans standing there watching it. And I saw Dayton and Dylan and then some girl all standing there talking to each other. Right away, I was like, okay, this is fate. I've got to go up and just get a picture with him and post it. I'm not going to ask him anything crazy or say anything. I'm just going to get a picture with him. So I walked up and said, hey, man. I was like, this is just the right place, right time. We got to take a picture together. He's like, okay, cool. And so we took a picture. Dayton took that picture. And then about 5 minutes later, I'm walking around the stadium and I hear corn craze. And then later after the game, more corn craze. Took pictures with some guys who follow the channel. But yeah, that was a cool day.
What is that like? I've had it, not probably to the extent that you have now, but I've had myself be recognized. I'm also recognized sometimes for being the doppelganger here of Coach Rhule, which that's a whole side note there. But what does that feel like to be walking around? Someone says corn craze. Someone knows who you are.
You know, at first it was very rare and it was kind of odd, but now it happens pretty often. I told you I live in Hollywood and I've had three people now at the grocery store, Target and Best Buy recognize me. In Florida all the time, I see people. Texas, where else was I? I was in New Orleans at the airport right after Trey Palmer committed. I had done a video where I talked about him once, and we're walking through the airport, and I crossed paths with him. He walks right up to me, says, what's up? Which I thought was really interesting. He'd only been at Nebraska for about a month at that point. He had just gotten off a plane from Nebraska and landed in Louisiana. Anyway, there have been a lot of times I was courtside at a Phoenix Sun game in the playoffs, and a guy walked around the court and came up to me to say, what's up? That was pretty cool. Anyway, there's just been so many random occurrences. It almost feels like a normal part of my life now. And it's really fun because my ultimate reason for creating Corn Craze, I said this back in the beginning, I really enjoyed having a community of people I could talk about Nebraska football with. People like me, not just the 70-year-old guy I'd see at the airport who saw me with a Nebraska hat, right? Guys who could have an engaging conversation. And now I have 17,000 of them plus more, because every time I go to a Nebraska game, more people see me and want to take pictures. And then more people say, who's that guy? And I'm like, oh, it's Corn Craze on YouTube. So, yeah, I did a meetup outside of the stadium after the Wisconsin game. There was 50-something people out there just waiting. And we took a bunch of pictures And I'm going to do more meetups like that after games I go to and do some things, because I really like meeting all the people who watch my show because they love all of this as much as I do. Right. So,
Well, I know we're going to have this is from a tweet from No Block, No Rock. And there's going to be a podcast awards here in August, first ever one for that. And that's going to be in La Vista. Are you planning to come out for it? I know you're going to be in it, so I didn't know if you were coming out for it or if they were going to do that virtual with you, but.
Yeah, my plan, I didn't really know what it was. People started sending it to me and they said, hey, you should do this. I didn't really know. And after I messaged No Block, No Rock, they said that it was a thing for the fans where Corn Craze subscribers would be able to go to it. So I would go to it. I'll fly out. I'll make a, it's like mission to fly out. I got to fly from here to Vegas or Denver and then to Omaha. And, you know, it's a whole thing, but I'll go if there's going to be other people who watch the channel there, because I think it's really cool for me to meet people who watch the content and I know they enjoy hanging out. So yeah, I'm definitely open to going. I can just catch a flight whenever. So
yeah. Well, and that was the initial feedback I heard of that was when Connor kind of said he was going, it's like, oh man, we may have some people coming to this thing now. May have some of the fans and you're following there. So
oh, yeah. Well, if it's open to fans and I put it on the channel, I can promise you there'll be a few people who go.
Yeah, we'll we'll find out with from No Block, No Rock. Those guys are kind of running that, so we'll see what they say. Mike Delaware right there, heck yeah. So anyways, we went back to Rayola here, and this weekend.
And by the way, if you want to push, I've got 15 more minutes, so we're good.
Okay. Rayola, that's a good place to start with this weekend. I'm not a big recruit Nick guy. I'm not somebody that gets, you know, too jumpy on five stars and all this. I loved it when Coach Osborne said when Coach Osborne talked about, you know, I don't really care about the stars. So I'm prefacing it with that. And so having said that, this is a pretty big weekend. I mean, like, this is not just like, even I have to sit here in my curmudgeon-y old way and go, this is a big deal. And this is a big deal also for Coach Rhule in a very early time in his coaching career to get something kind of started here at Nebraska.
You know, it's proof of concept. It's proof that he and this staff have what it takes to bring in big names. So although as a fan, you're going to get all these players to campus and we can forget about stars and whatever, let's talk about what the media impact is. When all of these players start to commit to Nebraska or just take visits to Nebraska and have them in the top five or top 10, other fan bases, other coaches around the country start to look, what? Nebraska? Why is Nebraska in the same conversation with Texas, USC, Ohio State, and Alabama? It starts to create that brand, and not create the brand because the brand's already created. It starts to rejuvenate that brand. It makes it more vibrant again. The dull end becomes a little bit more bright. People start to look at it a little bit differently. And if you have enough wins like that, if you have enough Rayolas come into the fold, then you've got all these young high school guys or middle school guys right now who are looking at where are the top guys visiting? Oh, Nebraska. Okay. I didn't even think to check out Nebraska. They win three games a year. Who cares about them? Well, you're now establishing that we're not that same team that gets walked over. We're not Illinois anymore. We were Illinois for a long time, but that's not what we are anymore. So I think it's really important to get those star guys on social media active, posting, showing what Nebraska is and get a couple of those commitments because it'll pay dues down the road.
You know, I mentioned earlier, I asked the question about realism and the optimist and we had a respondent earlier talk about, hey, I'm a realist. There's nothing wrong with being a realist. Absolutely. Nothing wrong with being a realist.
Yeah.
The realist that is just show me, prove it until I see it. You know, I just need wins and losses. No, this is actually an example this weekend. Everything you just mentioned, that is an example. If somebody comes up to me right now and says, oh, I've heard it all before. I've seen this all before. Have you really? I mean, because you can point to this weekend. I mean, we've all seen the little printout here of all the guys that are coming. Have you seen to that realist, to the person that's just being a pessimist just for the sake of it, have you seen that? There are changes. And this is where the optimism, now I'm starting to get excited. And yeah, you know, this is something new. This is something different that we didn't see for the last 5 years. And so that is a tangible evidence that they're doing something right. Now, they haven't closed on the players yet. I have a question for you on this. And maybe I'm making something up here, but is there any chance you think that Dylan Rayola doesn't come here as a recruit, but more as a recruiter? That in essence, that decision is kind of made that he's coming here to get other players to want to jump on board? Or do you think there's very much a recruiting job that needs to be finished with him?
Oh, okay. I think 100% the job needs to be finished. I think that Rayola, the whole idea that he's a secret commit is kind of far-fetched to me. I think it's exciting to believe that Raiola is like one of us, that Raiola wants to be at Nebraska the same way that Garrett Nelson or Thomas Bodoni wanted to be at Nebraska. And mm-hmm. who else? The lineman. Is it Knudsen? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So Scott's
blood. You've got guys like that who want to be at Nebraska and they're dialed in. I don't think Raiola's as dialed in as we are. He didn't grow up in Nebraska and he watched Nebraska kind of on the downhill. He never got to watch them because he was born in like what? Must have been 2005 or something. He never saw a really good Nebraska team. So my guess is Raiola's still a work in progress trying to sway him. I still believe he's going to come to Nebraska after it's all said and done, but I don't think that he's locked in by any means. I do think that he's recruiting. He's a peer recruiter for the three schools he's most excited about. And I have to assume that's USC, Georgia, and Nebraska. And if that's the case, and he's really peer recruiting, say four or five guys, wherever he goes, I think there's a good chance they land three out of five of those guys. So Raiola coming to Nebraska would be a big deal.
Well, and you mentioned the last time that we had, you know, an elite quarterback that we were able to bring in. And I can imagine, you know, you can pick one or two different guys from that era. But
yeah,
when you win titles, you know, you have elite quarterback play. And whether that elite quarterback comes in the form of a five-star quarterback or Stetson Bennett, who's a walk-on, doesn't really matter. By the time that they are winning titles for you, they're playing at an elite level.
Yep.
And we've had some quarterbacks here that have had high accolades, four-star for Adrian Martinez, all that, but never really got to an elite level of play here. And these are guys that played for three, four seasons for us. Tommy Armstrong played 3-4 years. Taylor Martinez, not bad quarterbacks, but when you winning national championships, and this is back in my wheelhouse of remembering that and being in school when those were going on, when you're winning national championships, you have elite quarterback play, and getting a guy like Dylan would be a great start. I'm just curious because, you know, and I get the sense here with Dylan that there's so many reasons to go to USC, right? We've heard them all. There's so many reasons to go to Georgia, and the ones that don't make sense are, you know, why come to Nebraska? Well, you have a chance to create that legacy. You have a chance. But I really wonder if it's about wanting to make sure to see it yourself and to see that what you're being told, but they want to come and see it. They want to see this coaching staff in action. They want to see them running practices. And so I guess, I'll go back to what you probably said. They probably still are they got to see it. It's a wait and see mode.
They need some proof. If Nebraska wins three games this year, and Dylan's committed, does Dylan stay committed? Yeah. That's a good question, right? And I think that if they can see that this staff isn't a three-win type of team, they can say, okay, this is the type of staff who leads a six-win team minimum, then they'll have a little bit more confidence, and that's what would earn the trust. When you look at USC or Georgia, he's not the end-of-the-day recruit. He's the end-of-the-cycle recruit. And then next year, they're going to go after the next big name. And the next year after that, they're going to go after the next big name. And if there's an opportunity in the transfer portal, you never know what's going to happen. You get injured at USC, you might never see your job again. Go ask JT Daniels.
Yep.
So it's tough when you're dealing with top-rated QBs all the time as a QB because you're fighting for your life. You're trying to get to the pros. And now you're not only focusing on being the best QB and doing all the right things to develop yourself. You're having to deal with three other guys around you who are fighting with almost as much talent as you have or more talent than you have, right? Come to Nebraska and you've got a clear path. You don't have to worry about any of that nonsense. You are the guy. I think that's a big selling point for a guy like Raiola.
The inner coach in me comes out too, is that if we get, you know, if he signs, there's still nothing guaranteed, right? You still got to go out. You still have to earn it. But if you come from a football family like he is, I don't think that he would take anything for granted. And speaking of that football family, having a direct inside source right now in his uncle who has experienced the last year of football here, and now he's experienced the transition. Talk about somebody that can just answer your questions on, hey, I can call you up at any time and just, I want to know something.
It's helping a lot.
I just get the sense that there's,
I'm telling you, I'm 70% sold that he's coming to Nebraska, but I'm capping it at 70% right now. There are some people who are like, there's no way it's happening and all their BS, whatever. But let's talk about the flip side.
Okay.
Dylan Raiola does not come to Nebraska because there's a chance he goes to Georgia or USC. How detrimental is it to this class and how detrimental is it to the long term of the program? Well, it's going to be tough for this class because I don't think there's a good chance that a guy like Carter Nelson even wouldn't come. He might go SEC. He might follow Dylan. And then all of those other big names who are coming on this weekend visit because of Dylan, they're going somewhere else. So the class might not be as special as we had hoped for. But in regards of quarterback, the beautiful thing about the transfer portal is there's always a starting quarterback available. There's always a guy who didn't get developed the right way at his last school, i.e. Jeff Sims. There's always a guy who didn't get the right opportunity. Well, if Dylan Raiola goes to Georgia or to USC, there are going to be two or three other quarterbacks who have to leave who are all rated pretty highly. Nebraska now becomes a school that's a really good fit for a lot of guys because they have the right staff in place. So although it'd be really exciting, it would put Nebraska, I think, years ahead if they were able to get Dylan. It's not the end of the world, and my heart won't be as broken as I think other people's will. A lot of people are really invested into Dylan, and I totally respect it, understand it, and I have the same wish. But I don't think it's as big of a deal because we've got the portal.
And I'll also say for a lot of those fans, if you're just beaten up because it doesn't, if it doesn't happen, these kids that are going to be here this weekend are not going to be the ones playing this fall. There's still going to be an entire season of football between now and then. And to your point, too, the way that this coaching staff interacts with people makes a difference. So when we don't go after Zane Flores from Gretna, quarterback that ends up going down to Oklahoma State.
Yep.
And we can look at that and say, yeah, that was a tactical error of the previous class. But what's one of the first things that this staff does? They go to Gretna, they make all the connections, and no, they're not going to flip the kid. No one expects that. But to your point, every year there are kids in the portal. Every year there are guys that go somewhere, it doesn't fit, and they go somewhere else.
Yep.
And they're, you know, you treat people right. Let's just set that as a standard. If you're Trev and you're just saying, this is what I want, the culture, what does culture of a program mean? We're going to treat people right. You've heard that from players. Look at today, Garrett Nelson at Pro Day, and he's hanging out there with Coach Rhule, and he has great words for Coach Rhule. When you treat people right, the players that have left the program, I know we're still at about 100, but the guys that have left the program, no one's leaving it with a bad taste in their mouth saying terrible things on their way out. That means something. And so that shit show that we've had at times where things that if it could go wrong, it would go wrong. At least right now, we're seeing things being done the right way, the way that we would expect it to be done. I don't know. That makes me feel pretty good. And that's usually really a pretty good sign.
Yeah, well, you look at some of the guys who left Nebraska in the past, and they did have some words to say about Nebraska, or at least it felt like they had some words to say based on some of their tweets, right? So, things are just on the right trajectory. They're projecting to be a positive next coaching cycle, not a not a negative one with that last situation. So I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Last thing I want to ask you, and then we can head out of here. We've heard a lot the last few years, and this is a little narrative that Mac and I on this show, we've started to kind of talk about, is the little things versus the basics and the details. We'd lose a bunch of games by one score. I mean, historically, you know, we've lost by a large margin the most one score losses in the last 2, 3, 4 years nationally. And it would be the little things, right? But those little things would be punting it to the wrong side of the field against Michigan State, or, you know, the penalties that we talked about and all the, and it gets to the point where it's like, those aren't little things. Those are basics. Those are details of football. And the little things are the things that we're hearing that, you know, when this staff goes and, you know, takes cookies or, you know, gets cookies from a coach's wife and goes and says, thank you. I mean, those are little things that do add up.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of curious from your perspective, you know, when you think of what the basics are of football and the details of football, and this is going to be a detailed oriented staff, what does that mean to you? What do you want to see out of a program that is detail oriented?
Yeah, I think take away the football side and let's just talk about everything else that's around it, because football is 12 games per year. That's 12 days out of the 365 days. Okay. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I could care less about what goes on those days, because those days are just a culmination of what goes on the other 300 and whatever it is. So you got 350 something days. Guys need to be on time. Guys need to be performing to their best ability in practice. Guys need to be lifting right, eating right, staying out of trouble. It's the details and the little things in the off season that makes a team good during the season. So if you look at the other big programs, Alabama, Georgia, USC, their coaches are all professionals. They all run it like a pro program, kind of like what we're seeing with Matt Rhule. So if we continue to see what Matt Rhule's doing, like suspending Anthony Grant for, I think they said it was academics, and you know, he's not all the way bought in, it doesn't sound like. You still see him at practice right now, or not at practice, mm-hmm. he's at Pro Day today.
Yep.
guys like that all understand that Matt Rhule is running this program like an NFL team, like a professional program. He's treating these guys all like they're student athletes, but he's treating them like young adults. And because they are adults, we're going to see, you know, USC, Alabama, Georgia type of results when we get to Saturdays in the fall. So I would say it's making sure that you do everything the right way in the off season. And then when it comes to the game days, I'm sure Matt Rhule is going to have a perfectly fine scheme, perfectly fine plan. But because guys are in the best shape, they're in the best mental state, and they know what it takes to win, we're going to see positive results.
I can see why you have 17,000 followers, Connor. That's a great answer there.
Thanks.
All right. Well, this is the parting shots, and we always give the final say to our guest. But just in general, I want to thank you first, Connor. It's been great to have you on here.
Yeah,
the fan forum. Yeah, the fan forum's a lot of fun. I want to go around and talk to fans from all across the country, former players. I'll have Adam Carriker on in a couple of weeks, and just getting people's perspective. But you've had a great perspective here, Connor. Take us out of here and also tell everyone where they can find you, social media, YouTube, everything.
Yeah, you can watch my YouTube. It's at Corn Crazed. If you haven't seen it before, we have fun over there. It's a community of Nebraska fans. It's not just me talking to you. It's me talking with you. It's where we can dive into topics that you want to hear about. And we're unfiltered, but we're also trying to have fun and like a good time. Not just talking about, you know, the stats and all the BS that goes into the day-to-day. We like to just talk about speculation and what could be, because we're a community that has hope, most of us. So I'd say that's the best way to sum up what Corn Craze is in. And if you do check out one of the videos and drop a comment, I always respond. And I try to communicate with everybody who watches and engages, because obviously they're the reason that I'm able to do this full time during the football season.
That's awesome. Yeah, the Redcast, we call ourselves realism with an optimistic spin, but that's what it gets back to. I love the community that you've created. It is something really special. And Redcasters, we have Redcast Nation, but I just want to say it again. I've been so impressed, Connor, with what you've created there. And I feel like it takes a lot for me at this point to do it. I've seen so many different shows and I've been around doing this long enough. But it's just absolutely great what you put together. I've really enjoyed it.
I appreciate it a ton. It's not about me. This is about Nebraska fans. For me, it's about being able to do this more often, right? I just want to be able to create all of this content because I have a good time doing it. But the reason Corn Craze exists is because I wanted there to be a place where we can all have fun and a good time. And I think that's what it's become.
Well, I think you're becoming a master of your content. And I appreciate you joining us tonight, Connor. And until next time, just remember, Redcasters, you too could be the next one to join us on the forum.
Heard at Sports Network Production.